Today on What's the Mood, we have the founder himself, John Underwood. John is a former NCAA All-American, an international-level distance runner, and World Masters champion. Among many things, John has coached and advised more than 24 Olympians, including world and Olympic champions. Today, we have the privilege in this two-part episode to talk all things sleep with John. You are in for a treat. Let's take a listen. All right. Welcome to What's the Mood. We are in for a real treat today with the founder of the Human Performance Project, John Underwood. What a treat to have you this morning, John. Welcome.
Thanks, Julie. And thanks to ILHP to keep this project rolling.
Yes. So, you know, we'll get going and turn it over to you here in just a second. But I actually asked you if we could talk about the very important topic of sleep, because here we just did a recent analysis on the highest downloads to our website, and they're all related to the resources we have on sleep. We have increasingly been going into high schools and junior highs in these last several years, and the continual conversation and new information we're coming into is the deprivation of sleep, the lack of value of sleep of students, the amount of students who are not getting an appropriate amount of sleep. And so I asked you to come share with us just about what you know about sleep, some of the new information and science around it, to elevate the conversation and just have a good chat about the importance of it. So you ready to go?
Yeah. Thank you. And it's certainly a worthy topic when you consider what young people today do at night instead of sleeping. So yeah, I think I would start out, I wanted to just say something as a starter, a prelude to this topic. And I just thought I'd start with a statement. It's not what you're capable of, it's what you're willing to do. And that statement is pretty awesome, because if you think, you know, lots of people are capable, but they're not willing. It's no different than you wanting to change any health related positive or negative behavior. It has to be that you're willing to make some changes or try. I always said to people, if you would just eat good foods for 2 weeks, sleep more for 2 weeks, have better health habits for 2 weeks, exercise for 2 weeks, a million scenarios, you could start to see in that time frame, just 2 weeks, 14 days, for some strange reason in the human body, you don't see anything in a day, you don't see anything in 2 days, 5 days, some minor changes. Often those changes health-wise could even make you feel worse if you're doing some things you shouldn't be doing to your health. But after 14 days, you actually start to physically, mentally, emotionally, you start to feel change happening in your existence. And so sleep would be a good one. And, you know, it's been now more than a decade of very, very significant focus on the importance of sleep in mental and physical performance. So whether that's the classroom or music, art, dance, sports, your job, we've actually made presentations even at companies, Fortune 500 companies, military. We did a huge program for sleep and, you know, guys that are going to go out on dangerous operations in military. We did the same information to, you know, classified military projects, the drone project, Top Gun, NorCal firefighters, guys that they go out in the woods to fight a fire. And, you know, what just happened in L.A. And, you know, you don't get a break. You don't get a rest. You're out there for, you know, days and days, hours and hours. And how big is the impact of sleep deprivation on decision-making, critical decision-making that might be life and death? At what point in time do you go off the cliff? How long can you function with minimal sleep or no sleep? And, you know, what kind of functions in your brain and body really deteriorate to the point where, you know, you might put yourself in a real bad situation? You know, a lot of, you know, adults or even kids now, so many of them drive. Mm-hmm. When you're fatigued and you're falling asleep, I mean, like, what's going on? What's going down? And your brain just gets to a point where it can't focus, and your attention span diminishes. And, you know, so all the little tricks that you think you can do to come out of the tailspin, mm-hmm. they're just tricks. once it's no different than a battery winding down, and eventually the charge is gone and it goes off. The same thing happens. I actually, some years ago, maybe 20 years ago, I had a late night drive back from almost from Philadelphia to northern New York, and it was about 2:30 in the morning, and I fell asleep at the wheel and went end over end twice in a company van, and it was just a horrific accident, and I walked away from it with a couple of scratches, and I thought to myself, never again. I don't care how important it is to get somewhere or get home. I learned my lesson that night. Pull over, and sleep, because it's not worth your life. And it's the same thing. If we want performance, what are we willing to do to make that happen? So anyway, if you're really thinking about, young people, maybe you're starting to find out that you have some talents for something, and you start to put some of your investment in it. And whether it's, like I said, music, art, dance, academics, sports, you invest more and more in it, time, effort, and energy, and then you start to think, okay, I have some goals. I want to make the team start. I want to go to state. I want to, go to NCAAs when you get in college. I want to be an All-American, whatever. I want to go to the Olympics. A million scenarios in any of those venues. And sleep is one of those choices, and it really has come to the forefront of importance in performance, because we've linked it to every single physiological function and performance capacity in your body and brain. And so
John, I'll cut you off just for
why?
a second. One, I'm glad you were okay after that accident. Two, I just want to imagine like an adolescent or a parent is listening and says, I think my student is willing to take a look at their sleep, or an adolescent or athlete is like, I'm willing. What are some of the things you know about sleep, like the state of sleep or its impact on performance, that could help them think through how to change that mindset of willingness and action.
It's a good question, because like any other question you could ask me about performance and improving any capacity, including skills, endurance, speed, power, putting on muscle mass, anything, it all comes down to, sort of like, and this is a big part of improvement, is stressing yourself and then recovering from that stress, and then realizing that it's had some kind of an increase in the performance capacity. And if you think about the old days, and this goes back to your great 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 grandmother, when she was given advice, and she said a person needs 8 hours of sleep a night. All right, where did people come up with 8 hours? Well, 8 hours of sleep is really sort of the benchmark for getting enough sleep so that you can have all of these amazing capacities and physiological functions and brain functions, come to their full abilities. And when kids are growing, and so, like middle schoolers through high schoolers and beyond, kids are growing into their early 20s. You need even more sleep. And when you're training hard, you need even more sleep. When we were working on projects with Olympic athletes, they're training. They're not training once a day from 3 to 5 o'clock like a high school kid. They're training, two or three times a day. And because they're training more, they need more sleep, because they do more damage and they need more time to repair it. So 8 hours of sleep, ironically, still remains the benchmark for the minimum amount of sleep a human should shoot for. Because there's a particular phase of sleep which is called REM. Everyone has heard of REM, not just the musical group a few decades back, but REM is rapid eye movement sleep. It's a form of sleep when your body sort of sets off an amazing array of functions, and a lot of them are repair functions, but also a lot of them are growth functions. In 8 hours of sleep, you actually accumulate these bursts of REM sleep. And if we look at brain waves, REM is very unique. When you go into REM, it's absolutely clear. You could not have to be a sleep scientist or a brain scientist to say, oh my goodness, this person now is in REM. And what happens is you go into a deep phase of sleep. And at that point in time, all these other functions kick in. It's absolutely incredible. So in 8 hours of sleep, you accumulate about 1.5 to 2.5 hours of REM. So out of a whole 8 hour night of sleep, if you sleep that much, what you're shooting for is that you will get 3, 4, 5 bursts of REM that will accumulate a total time of about 1.5 to 2.5 hours that you're actually in REM. And in REM, some amazing things happen. And I could tell you what some of them are. Some of them are training and training effect basically takes place. So it's pretty important that, you did a workout today and that was the stimulus for you to maybe have some breakthroughs or gains in your muscle physiology or your endurance capacity, speed capacity, power output capacity, reaction, the speed of how fast you can do it, how accurately you can do it, which would be skills. So when you're in REM sleep, all those things integrate and repair. So any damage you've done, repairs, say you did a really hard workout today and you said, "Oh my God, I did this great workout today." Well, that's great. But tonight, when you're in asleep and you go into REM, that's when the repair takes place. That's also when the growth factors are released and muscle, like for instance, a young athlete would maybe he lifted weights today and he did a bunch of damage and he goes into a status of inflammation. And then at night, when you go into REM, you release all they're almost like little like drones that go all through your blood system and across cerebrospinal fluid and into the brain, and they target damaged areas. And they actually then at night when you go in REM and you send those hormones out in your bloodstream, like human growth hormone and testosterone and those growth hormones, IL-6 is one of them, they will target that the hormones go to those areas that you damaged. And when you repair those damaged areas, you actually don't just increase the size of the muscles and you put on muscle mass, and if you have larger mass, you can move the skeleton faster and you can make all these amazing things happen as a young athlete. You also, in fact, increase the capacity of the muscle to do work. So that could be you're stronger, you're faster, you have more endurance, you have higher skills, you have the ability to do things you couldn't do before. So it's an incredible connection that was first looked at by a famous researcher at Stanford Sleep Lab. And Stanford's one of the best universities in the world, if not the best. Certainly one of the best we have in this country. But Sherry Ma started the studies. She linked it to performance in season with teams that were in their competitive seasons, and amazing stuff came out that was so compelling that, everybody sort of got on that page. I was then working with a lot of pro teams and projects with all the best NCAA teams, and I would go in and explain, like, you can do great workouts, but if you don't sleep, it's like the money never goes in the bank. And same thing when you're practicing a skill, and I don't care if we're talking about playing a guitar or a musical instrument or dance or balance or coordination or reaction time or your 3-point percent, your free throw percent. I mean, you look at an athlete like, Steph Curry. There's some famous videos on YouTube of him warming up for a game, and he's out there, and they're just somebody throwing him basketballs, and he's just moving further and further out, and every single shot he throws up is going in. Then he gets to half court, and he's throwing them up. Every one of them's going in. I'm not talking some of them. Every single shot's going in. Well, he didn't get that good by, watching videos. He got that good by taking 300, 400, 500 shots a day, or making 300, 400, 500 shots a day until he got so good at it that it's autopilot. And same thing, if you don't practice your skills and get REM sleep, you start to lose your ability to have the accuracy of your skills. So maybe your average for a game is, 12 points a game or 20 points a game or whatever, and you're a basketball player, and all of a sudden you're missing a whole bunch of shots, and you have to practice. So there's this doctor, and he's done a lot of sleep work. His name is Walker. His name is Matt Walker. He's from Australia, and Australia has very high level sports science. So he was doing some work on just this topic, sleep, and he said, practice makes perfect. Everyone has heard that concept or that statement. But he said that's not true. He said practice doesn't make perfect. He said practice and 8 hours of sleep makes perfect. And so there's a quote for you that, like, you ought to put in your playbook. Because, I know this, in the work I did with Olympic athletes and professional athletes for over 20 years. It was 24 years that I was working with those groups. And I'm talking the best of the best, Alabama football After I have the letter still. I was at my camp the other day, and I have a box there with important papers in it, and I saw the envelope from Alabama, and it was a personal letter from Coach Saban after I spoke there. And he said, "Look, we monitored these guys a lot with all these systems and modern technology systems, but we weren't monitoring their sleep." Well, after you left, he said, "We instituted a sleep survey, and guess what we found out? They weren't sleeping enough." So all that good stuff that you have all those experts there doing with the guys, the strength and power people, the rehab people, the people who make sure that they're not, getting injured, or that they have the best means to come back from, minor injuries and injuries. All that stuff's for naught if you're not sleeping. And it sort of throws water on the fire of everything that you could potentially, have going in the right direction, or having the gains be incredibly more than you could even imagine.
Yeah,
So,
tell me, John, a little bit about the impact of sleep and injury on athletes.
across the board, all these studies that have been done started out just on, bringing to light the fact how much sleep you need and that people weren't getting enough. All right, that's a starting point. And maybe that's a starting point for the willingness to change, because it's too important to leave undone. It's the same principle. When you run out of gas, your car stops. When you run out of neural energy reserves, brain energy reserves, central nervous system energy reserves, body system energy reserves, the drop off is like going off a cliff. So yeah, there's some huge studies that have been done on injuries. And just to give you some data on this, I remember the first injury studies that came out. They were talking about the connection of, people who sleep less than 8 hours, less than 7 hours, and they measured it like four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. When I was working with the Olympic sport federations in America and in Canada and in a lot of other countries, they would bring me in to explain this. I went to Japan and China and everywhere. And what I was saying is that if you're going to train 2 or 3 times a day, you need 9+ hours of sleep a day. Eight won't cut it. Not when you're training 3 times a day. So anyway, some of those studies here were a couple of the most important points, or the salient points from those studies. This guy, his name was Malusky, and he just did some new ones, which I threw in here because I thought it would be interesting for people to hear this. And here were some of them. If you sleep less than 8 hours, your chance of becoming injured increases by 65%. 65% of people, athletes, this was high school athletes too, so this ought to be pretty pertinent for your kids in your high schools there and around the metro. 65% of people who slept less than 8 hours got injured. So that's not going to really help you much if you got a football team and, maybe you got 50 kids on your team, or 60 kids on your team. That leaves you with some, a wake of people who can't play or on crutches or on the bench. Here were some other ones. Less than 8 hours of sleep, the actual how many times more injury was 1.7 times more injury. So heading towards twice as many injuries because you sleep too little. 6 versus 9 hours of sleep. So if you dip down to 6 hours, there's lots of kids in high school and middle school that are sleeping 6 hours a night. And I can tell you that because we did surveys, sleep studies in whole entire states, New York, New Hampshire, New Mexico, California, where we actually surveyed middle school and high school athletes. So say six, you're getting 6 hours of sleep versus nine. It's four times the increase in your injury rate. Sleep clearly is the number one way to reduce an injury. You can take all the precautions you want with, stretching and, cold and, nutrient uptake and all these different factors, hydrotherapy with water and so forth, compression, wearing compression garments, or, they have ways of getting all the residue out of your muscles with compression. But none of that is as important as it is to sleep. So it's not like this is something that is, theoretical. This is something that's now known fact. I guess what I would say is, your coach isn't going to, for you coaches listening or people who care about performance, you're not going to be there when your athletes get tucked in at night, but you certainly have an obligation to impress upon them how important it is, because I remember kids when I used to coach, and I had lots of Olympic athletes I coached, including some world and Olympic medalists. And I remember when kids are young and they do a really good workout, they come to you and they go, "Coach, I did a great workout." And I used to go, "Look, I'm not trying to be mean here, but like that's awesome that you did a great workout, but one workout doesn't make anything happen. It's a trend that like over 2 weeks, a month, that you do, 14 or 20 or 30 good workouts and 30 good days of nutrition and 30 good days of recovery methods and 30 good days of sleep with a giant capital SLEEP. That's what you want, because during sleep is when all the good stuff happens. The vast majority of training effect takes place during sleep. And unfortunately, if you shortchange it, a lot of that stuff, like I said, the money never goes in the bank. I always say, at this age, some of you kids are starting to save money, and maybe you got a bank account and your parents are impressing upon you to save some money for college, or maybe you're paying some of your own bills for your car insurance or whatever. You want to buy a vehicle. And, all of us had those same scenarios when we were kids. But like, think if every day, every week you went to the bank and you gave the lady your money at the, or the man the money at the teller position, and they gave you a receipt and you walked out, and then you checked your bank statement at the end of the month and there was no money in your account. Well, that's the same scenario for you guys that want to put in all this time, effort, and energy and work to be a good musician or artist or student or anything. You can't shortchange the sleep, or it just doesn't happen. And we linked it in our New Hampshire project to GPA. Like, we saw some original studies that were done at the U.S. Naval Academy in West Point, where they had gathered data about sleep and lack of sleep and grade point average. And it was absolutely incredible, the change in your GPA, how much higher it was when you would get sleep. So that's important. And then it was also linked to other things. It was linked to, technology. It was linked to diet. It was linked to stress. If you think about sleep disturbances, there's hundreds of different things that disturb sound sleep. So maybe if you have a sleep disturbance, the total amount of time you sleep, the total quality of time that you sleep, that you're actually in REM in some of those restorative phases of sleep, a lot of those things are diminished. And because they're diminished, so is all those abilities for your body to make gains. Instead, you end up losing, or maybe you do hard workouts and the workouts go great, you don't sleep, and like I said, you don't improve, you don't get better. And so, it's not something that you can dispel anymore and just say, "Well, lots of other people are tired too, and lots of other people get 6 hours and change." You're just like I said, you're losing so much, and you're wasting time, effort, energy, and it's not going to pay out when you want it to. So anyway, that's some of the things that come to mind for me. Nutritionally, there's things you can eat that cause a sleep disturbance. You could guess that. They know now there's certain things that actually induce sleep, make you get tired and groggy and fall asleep. And I've written some things about it. If you look in the Power Back Diet, which is one of our original published documents, how is nutrition linked to sleep? Fiber and tryptophan, foods that actually have tryptophan in them, make you release or turn on melatonin, which makes you get tired and sleepy, and unsaturated fats also. Those three things together actually help you fall asleep, and even the next day have some kind of an ability to not make you crave sugar and processed foods and junk foods. So that's important. And also eating too late at night. Like, after 8 o'clock at night, you shouldn't be eating a lot of solid foods. And yet I think of young people, ordering a pizza late at night and eating four or five pieces of pizza, and it's sitting in your gut, and your body releases these hormones to break down the food that's sitting in your gut, and those hormones actually agitate a lot of these sleep cycles that would allow you to, for instance, go into REM. We've looked at that, and we've written some stuff about that. So there are sleep-inducing foods. You want to find out what they are, and I can tell you some if you want to know. But also, you control like what you do. I mean, think of caffeine and the incredible overuse of caffeine in our culture now, and how dangerous that is. And I could even, if you want, Julie, I could paint you a little picture about that. I just think of the difference of how many kids when I was growing up, and that's a different generation, as is your parents' generation if you're a kid, and you parents can think of your parents, which would be the grandparents of you kids, how different it was. Like, caffeine's been around a long time, but now it's just everywhere, and people use it as a crutch. And most people using it as a crutch are using it because they're so fatigued and tired.
I think this is good, John, because you're saying that perhaps the starting point at the willingness piece is even the acknowledgement or the assessment of knowing that you're not getting enough sleep. Because I'm imagining there could be I actually know a lot of adolescents I work with who want to get better sleep, realize that it's an issue in their life. And like, I think what you're starting to paint a picture of is it's not as basic as, okay, well, make sure your head is on the pillow at 9:30 every night, because there are a lot of kids who put their head on the pillow at 9:30 and their mind is racing and they can't find their way to sleep. It's a real challenge. And I think what you're saying is there are some factors that play against sleep, like diet and stress and technology. And then there are certain factors that lead you to the sleep that you're talking about, like fiber, tryptophan, unsaturated fats, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's also the quick fix, which people have relied now on in our culture on stimulants. I mean, when I was a kid, there were zero energy drinks, none, zero. They didn't make them. Now there's over 250 different kinds, and all the names if you're a kid, and you think that that's some way gonna help you. But let me just give you a spin on that, because an incredible market that's gone through the roof. You never used to see this either. Is that, the hormone that makes you actually get groggy enough to fall asleep and transition from wake state to falling asleep is melatonin, which is a it's sleep hormone actually. And melatonin, now you've seen in the stores all these melatonin gummies. So you know what kids do if they're tired? So many kids now use melatonin. It's a really bad cycle, and it's a really bad mistake, and I'll tell you why. Any hormone and anything that in your body that has a physiological function to make something happen, if you naturally produce it and you start taking it in from an outside source, what do you think happens to your body? Your body stops producing the same levels that it was producing of your own. So your body produces melatonin. A lot of it's from the breakdown of foods and specific nutritional items. And I'll give you an example. One of the most loaded foods with melatonin is turkey. All right, so if you eat turkey, do you ever eat turkey on Thanksgiving? And like after dinner, you it's not just that you ate a lot of turkey and there's a lot of blood flow in your gut and not in your brain and central nervous system, or certainly your brain. And then you go and you actually sort of feel dizzy and like energyless, and you feel like sleepy, and oh my God, I feel like I'm gonna fall asleep, groggy almost. It's like a wave comes over you because turkey's so loaded with tryptophan. And tryptophan is one of those things that turns on melatonin, and your body just starts to put you to sleep. So, kids now, a lot of kids start to take melatonin, but you alter your own natural melatonin levels, and it's a dangerous game. Your body's not a chemistry kit. If you give your body good food, good sleep, you have all the micro and macronutrients that a body needs, including minerals and vitamins and those things. Your body will run like your car runs on good gas. So I have a little cocktail that I use. We were one of the first organizations to ever link how many people are magnesium deficient. So I used to tell people, and this is back, I'm talking 25 years ago, when we got on this page, we saw from a huge dehydration study that we did that out with all your body salts, when you sweat goes these electrolytes. Certainly sodium and potassium and magnesium. So because athletes train, they sweat more than a person who doesn't train. About 80% of athletes who train regularly systematically are magnesium deficient. Magnesium at that time was involved in, I found research, it was involved in 300 physiological processes in the human body, and 200 of them were in the brain and central nervous system. So I used to just go in and say, y'all need to get on some magnesium, like 400 or 500 milligrams a day, because you're already magnesium deficient. It has so much to do with heart function, brain function, muscle function, reaction time, the speed at which the signals are sent within your body. It's a catalyst. It's an incredible catalyst for all these functions. So people started taking magnesium, but they were just taking some generic, magnesium. And I can tell you that the kind of magnesium that actually makes you relax enough to sleep is magnesium glycinate. And if you take magnesium glycinate, which there's eight different kinds of magnesium, some won't help you sleep at all. Some won't help you recover at all. Some won't do what I just mentioned magnesium helps you to do. But if you take magnesium glycinate, green tea, which has L-theanine in it, which is another sleep inducer, and tart cherry juice or black cherry juice, and I'm not talking about the sugar cherry juice laced with, 29 grams of sugar. I'm talking about real cherry, black cherry juice. That cocktail right there, I actually call it my cocktail, that will actually help you fall asleep. It'll zonk you. And the reason is it'll re it put a spin on your release of tryptophan, and that'll put open the gateway for melatonin release, and you'll fall asleep. So a big part of sleep hygiene, and you used the word, and we did too, Julia, when we started these projects, and we wrote the sleep manual, which is still available, and you all ought to read it. It's a thriller that goes with the Power Back Diet. You can get it from ILHPP. They will get you a copy, or post a copy, or make a copy available. It's all electronically. It can be sent to you. The sleep manual was the first document ever, and it's sort of it was sort of fantastic for me as a doing these worldwide clinics.
Because this conversation was so robust, we are going to stop here, and you can enjoy part 2 of this conversation of sleep with John and I on our next episode.